Good morning. Today is Monday, May the 23rd. Joining us this morning is, let's see, candidate running unopposed.
Correct.
Assistant assessor, or is it deputy?
Deputy assessor.
All right. Deputy assistant sheriff. An all-around good guy, Howard LaHaye. Good morning, sir.
Good morning. How you doing today?
Good. It's a Monday. What could be better, right?
You're right. Start the week off wonderful.
All right. Are you ready for our question? Why do we say it?
Okay.
All right. Let's see. This is even from Money and Business, so you might have half of a shot. Why do we say somebody Welshes
somebody
on a bet? Yeah.
Welshes. I have no idea.
All right. This one's a little bit lengthier. When an obligation is loose, there's a chance that one party will Welsh on the other. Gambling debts are especially vulnerable, but a default can take place any time money is involved, especially at a racetrack. Clearly disparaging, even when used by Americans who have never been close to Wales. Well, we should have saved this one for Michael. The expression took root in at least 150 years ago. Like terms that disparage the French or the Spanish, this one grew out of hostility. Ideas behind it are reflected in a familiar children's rhyme, which is not really all that familiar. Taffy was a Welshman, Taffy was a thief. Okay. Doesn't sound really good. These lines, along with a verb fashioned after Taffy's nationality, preserve long-standing English views. According to them, a fellow had better demand cash if he sells anything to a native of Wales or lets him try to pick a winner in a race. Otherwise, they may be long gone, leaving nothing to cover their obligation. So it's a reference to the nation.
Yeah, interesting.
Yeah, it's probably a good thing Michael's not here.
Well, that's something new.
Yeah, not a positive.
Like I always say, you learn something new every day.
Yes, exactly. Oh, so for folks that are unfamiliar, and I would suspect that a vast majority of the Weans are, why is there an assessor's office?
Why is there an assessor's office? Well, good question. By state law, we have to assess properties for property tax purposes. And what the assessor's office really does is, in all 58 counties in California, by law, assess properties. And those tax dollars they support schools, road repairs, special districts such as fire departments, and then the county itself. And people don't realize that out of all the tax dollars that's collected, say in Humboldt County, that goes to the state. The county only gets approximately about 16% of that. And of those tax dollars, about 65 to 68% of it goes to schools. And then the other remaining percentage goes to roads, fire districts, and so on.
So 16% of our property tax?
The dollars collected.
Stays.
Yes.
And the rest
goes to the state.
Sacramento.
Goes to Sacramento.
Is the assessor's office one of the constitutional offices in the county? What, there are like three or four of them is all?
Yeah.
But it's one that's
so
in the
assessor,
Constitution.
So the assessor, treasurer, tax collector, your auditor controller, your sheriff, and your district attorney.
And the auditor controller could be melded into one of...
Yes.
With a vote. But the others are in the Constitution, locked in.
Yes. They, in order to, say, combine offices, it has to go to vote to the people to do that. I believe a year or two ago, the county had put that out to the voters to combine the treasurer, tax collector, and the auditor controller's office. And when it went out to vote, it did not pass. And so that's why they remain separate.
But the others can't be combined.
They cannot. Like, for instance, our office, the assessor's office, cannot be combined with the treasurer, tax collector, or the auditor controller. There's a conflict of interest.
Or the sheriff.
Or the sheriff. And I'm not sure if I'd want to take on that role anyways.
Yeah, yeah. Or they, you.
That's
so
correct.
You presume that you win this battle.
That's true.
So the assessment, is that, Proposition 13 is in the equation.
Yes.
Also, and it's... Who was on? Somebody was on last. Oh, Karen Deemer was on last Friday. And I didn't realize, but we're coming up almost on 50 years since Prop 13 was passed.
Yeah, 1978.
And it's still the whipping boy.
It is.
What did it do to property taxes?
So what Prop 13 did when it was passed in 1978, it put a mandate into how property are going to be assessed or when they're going to be assessed. Prior to Prop 13, about every 4 years, properties were reassessed at their current market value. And what that did is it put a lot of people, that especially the older population that were on fixed incomes, it put them in a position where they couldn't even afford their property taxes anymore, and so they were losing their homes. And what this did is put more, is stabilized it, and allowed that only reassessment could occur if there was a change of ownership or if there was any type of new construction.
New construction being like a handicapped ramp?
Could be anything.
Or anything that pulls a hot water heater pulls a permit.
Yes.
So that really isn't
no,
model.
It's something that would add value to the property. And when new construction would be whether it's a new building or an addition to an existing building. So if it adds any value, so like a re-roofing to your house, adding a hot water heater, like you said, those aren't necessarily adding value.
More just maintenance issues.
They're just maintenance issues. And we're not going to reassess those.
When you're in an area that is relatively flat or consistent, mm-hmm. as we were for a long mm-hmm. period of time, there's not that much to the reassessment, is there? But is this a requirement of the office?
It is a requirement by state law, yes. And when we run in, the other thing that happened when Prop 13 was passed originally, they didn't put something in there when the market was in a decrease. And so when you were reassessed at a higher rate or value, all of a sudden you're paying taxes on a property that's not worth as much with the current market. And so that's when Proposition 8 was introduced, and it allowed the county to look at your assessed value, and if it was considered the market value lower than your current assessed, then it gave the county the ability to reassess it temporarily to that market value.
KINS, News and Information Time, it's 8:19.
Hi there, and good evening, and welcome to the Jim Bohannon Show from Westwood One Radio. We're at 1-866-50-JIMBO, 1-866-505-4626. Weekdays at 7 p.m., it's the Jim Bohannon Show. I'm Jim Bohannon. Join me here on KINS.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:24. We're back talking shop this morning with Howard LaHaye from the Assessor's Office, soon to be the Assessor.
That is correct.
Yeah, unless the mouse gets the right ends.
That is true.
Yeah, yeah.
There's always another option there.
Now, before the break, you had mentioned about Prop 8, which allowed for the devaluation or recognition of the potential of devaluation.
Correct.
I would imagine Paradise probably went through something like that.
Yes.
Because of the fires. Santa Rosa certainly did not.
Yes.
But I think locally, the last time there was a lot of discussion about that is when the pulp mills shut down. And all of a sudden, it went from being a productive, active business site to crickets. What is the process if somebody has property that they think might be at or lesser value now than what it was when it was last assessed?
Yeah. So that when there's a decline in the market value of the property, the state law, which is considered Proposition 8, allows the county to look at the value of the property. And it's something like the pulp mill, for instance, is what's its highest and best use, and what's its current condition? And if it was to sell on the market at a certain point in time, what would it sell for? And so the county would be challenged with determining what that value is. And
yeah, the comps are kind of thin on that one.
Yeah, and those can be very challenging. And so a lot of times with unique properties like that, we will have to go outside of our county to look for similar properties, and then we would make adjustments based on its location.
So when properties get assessed, regular old house,
mm-hmm.
and they do, the realtor or the broker does the market comparatives.
Mm-hmm.
Do you guys do something similar to that, or do you reach out to the real estate, you know, whether it's the association or individuals that you have higher confidence in? Do those estimates? Do you guys do your own real estate?
Yes.
I mean, how do you arrive at those figures? Do you have a sense of what something is?
So we do maintain our own database with sales. And so we'd have our own records, and we will look at, so if we're looking at a particular area, wherever it's, you know, Fortuna, McKinleyville, Shelter Cove, wherever the location may be, and we'll look at what properties have sold in those areas. And we'll look at our own records. We don't have access to the MLS or anything like that. So we have to, we're challenged with keeping our own database of sales. And so we will refer with those. And we are currently working on establishing and making our database a little bit more robust. And we have the ability to actually, before we had actually physical books that we had sales in that we use. And so now we're moving forward to where we can actually put in the criteria for a property, and boom, and then pops up, you know, similar properties that have sold in that area. And so
you kind of get a range, and it's a little bit more narrowed.
Yeah. And then we could take that, and then we look at the compare, you know, we compare the subject property with what came up in our search, and then make adjustments based on the differences between the different properties.
Now, if somebody has what they feel is a viable argument,
mm-hmm.
That house sold, but it had formal gardens in the back and a pool and.
Right.
We don't. What do they do? Can they just kind of knock on your door and say, hey, Howard, can we sit down and talk a little bit?
Yeah, that's the first step. If a property owner really feels that they're being overassessed, that the value that we established is higher than what their opinion is the first step is to contact our office, and let's talk about it, and let's compare, you know, what the information that we have versus maybe what you have. Some of the more remote properties, we may have access challenges getting on there, and so maybe we had to use aerial, photos and stuff like that. And so
you mean Google Earth?
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay.
And so, you know, maybe we need to set up an appointment with the actual property and go out there and look at the details. But if we don't come to an agreement and we still say nope, this is the value that we believe is the market value for this assessment, then you have a right to, as a property owner, to appeal your value.
So does that then go to the courts, or
we have
go to the local broker association?
No, the county has its own local board of equalization, and it's assessment appeals board, and it's run by, it's oversaw by the clerk of the board and the board of supervisors. And so we work with them, but they're the ones that once that appeal goes to the clerk of the board and the board of supervisors, it goes to get scheduled for an appeal. There's a non-biased panel that it's, you know, a couple, there's a fee appraiser, I believe, and an accountant, and then a real estate broker.
So everybody's kind of represented there. Yeah.
So they have, yeah. In order to be on the board, you have to have some kind of real estate experience.
You mean you can't be a radio dude?
Well, unless you got some real estate experience.
Yeah. That would be a successful radio dude. No. Yeah. And that's kind of that wraps it up at that point.
Yeah. And then the property owner presents their information and why they believe that, you know, this is what their opinion of value should be, and then the assessor's office will do the same, And then the board will take that information and they make the decision, and their decision's final.
KINS, News and Information Time, it's 8:30.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
And these kids who come, they become Americans before a lot of Americans become Americans.
Now, here's your host, Lars Larson.
Hey there, it's Lars Larson. Join me for the Lars Larson Show, weeknights 10 to midnight. Honestly provocative talk radio on KINS.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:35. We're back talking shop this morning with Howard LaHaye from the Humboldt County Assessor's Office. Howard, what are some of the things that regular folks really don't know about that could either help them out or pitfalls that we would want to avoid when it comes to either property taxes or assessments and that area of responsibility that is handled by that department?
One of the big things is a homeowner's exemption. A lot of people don't realize that is for your principal residence, you are allowed it's called a homeowner's exemption, and it's a $7,000 exemption, which equates to about $70 a year in property tax savings. And it's not automatic. You have to file for that. Whenever there's a ownership change, with our current database, it puts a little flag on the property, and we automatically send out that form to all the new property owners. And a lot of people don't even understand what it is. They receive it. I know before I worked in the assessor's office, I got this card in the mail, and like, what the heck is this? You know, and I didn't know, so I signed it and sent it back in. It wasn't until I got into the assessor's office I realized, oh, that's that card I signed.
Good move.
Yeah. And so you are entitled to that if only for your principal residence.
That's true if you purchase an existing. Is that also new for new home construction?
Yes, correct.
So you'll be getting a postcard if your residence
Yes, you are
changes.
You are correct.
Okay.
Yeah, so if wherever your principal residence is located, you're only allowed one in the state of California. So if you have multiple homes throughout the state, you're only allowed to have that homeowner's exemption on whatever is considered your principal residence. The same for veterans. There's exemptions for veterans. There's one is for veterans, but it's only a $4,000 exemption, and so you're better off to have the homeowners instead of that.
Oh, it's one or the other?
Yeah, you can only have one exemption, but there's one for disabled veterans. It's a significant amount of exemption, and depending on it's based on your income, and you have to have a rating from the Department of Veteran Affairs. And so if you're considered 100% disabled due to your stint in the military, or if you're unemployable because of your disability, then you're entitled to this. And that in the amount of the exemption changes yearly, and so it usually goes up every year based on inflation. And so
so that's a value, not a percentage.
Yes. So like for instance, if you're just get the basic, and you can get, I think this year it's $123,000 exemption. And if you're considered low income, and there's the threshold, I think this year is around $55,000 a year, then you get an exemption up to $245,000, somewhere in that neighborhood.
So these could be some pretty significant savings.
Very significant. So if anybody that's that may be disabled veteran, that you know their disability was caused during their time in the military. And if you haven't already, contact your Department of Veteran Affairs, get your rating, and get that submitted to our office, and we can get that exemption instituted for you.
What about those folks who are on fixed incomes or retired, you know, the 65-plus crowd? Is there anything for them, or is it just it's a property?
The only thing there is, the state has it's a property tax postponement program, and it's and that's run by the state controller's office. And what that does it is they basically pay your property tax for you. There's just pretty significant requirements to be able to meet that is
high threshold, huh?
Yeah, okay. I think like you, it's based on income and age, and I believe that the threshold on the income is around 35,000 or something like that annually. So, and if you fall in that category, and the age is 63 or 2, somewhere in that neighborhood. But if you go to the website for the state controller's office, all that information is on there. And what they do is they'll send us a notice. We put a notation into your on your assessment that you're in that program, and so that your tax bills will be forgiven. And then once the person sells the property or something changes, then it's removed from that program.
With some of the different activities that are out there, as you look at the overall complexity, you know, with real estate being as increased as it is in our area, whether it's home or mm-hmm. undeveloped property, you guys running around a whole lot more, or
yes.
you're just multiplying by bigger numbers?
Both. I mean, not only are the values increasing dramatically, but the quantity of properties that we're seeing transfer is increasing as well. We process on an average prior to the last year, probably in about 6,500 recorded deeds annually. This year it has increased to probably around 7,500. And so there's a lot more activity in the real estate.
So a deed being recorded as a sale from
could be.
Many of our definitions, that, but yeah. we've not heard that there are 6,500 homes on an average year being sold. So what?
So yes. So when I say 6,500 to 7,500 deeds recorded, it doesn't mean that they're all being, it could be just, I'm taking my property and putting it into a trust. We still have to process that in our office. Doesn't mean we're going to reappraise that property.
It's an activity.
Yeah. Or I'm going to transfer my property to my kids. You know, it may be excluded from reassessment, so we're not going to reassess that. But our office still has to process that.
Got to be current.
Correct.
Correct and current.
Yeah. We try to, our office tries to be as current as we can. Right now, with the influx of deeds that we're getting, and for some reason, than last year, there's been a lot more deaths of property owners that we've been processing as well, and so we've fallen a little behind, and so our office right now is about 4 months behind in our deeds. So anybody that's transferred a property in the last 4 months, we may not have processed it yet.
KINS News and Information Time. It's 8:43.
Hi folks, Fly Humboldt wants to remind you that flying local is buying local. And with airlines going to seven cities serving hundreds of destinations, it's easier than ever to get to where you want to go from Humboldt County's airport. That's right, you can fly on American, Avelo, and United Airlines nonstop to Denver, Hollywood, Burbank, Los Angeles, and San Francisco. Flying has never been more convenient or affordable, so book your trip now. For more information, go to flyhumboldt.org.
Good morning, KINS News and Information Time. It's 8:47. We're back talking shop this morning with Howard LaHaye from the Assessor's Office. Howard, for the assessment process, is there any distinction or any differentiation between whether or not you have an impounded account or if you pay your taxes twice a year? Do either one of those set property into a different category?
For the Assessor's Office, it does not. That's just the financial portion and how you pay your taxes, and that's on the county level, that's managed by the Treasurer Tax Collector's Office. When we look at reassessment, it has nothing to do whether or not you have an impound account or not. One of the misconceptions is that people, when they do have an impound account, and they have a supplemental assessment for whether new construction or the change of ownership, when you get that supplemental bill, it may not be paid by your mortgage lender. And so it's up to the property owner to either communicate that you have a supplemental tax bill with your mortgage lender, or to pay that themselves.
Now, if you pay it the first time, then it gets rolled in?
Correct.
Subsequently, you don't have to chase that one down?
No, it's just that one time. Supplemental bills are just a one-time tax bill.
Unless you're really active.
Unless you have a lot of construction or something going on.
Oh, so the pitfalls, or the things that, I guess, the stereotypes that you guys deal with.
Mm-hmm.
What's the biggest one?
I think the biggest one is that we don't care, and that all we're here is we want money. and that's not necessarily the case. We're here to serve the public, but we also mandated by state laws. And so we have to follow the state laws. And so one of them is to reassess your property when there's a change of ownership, or you're building new structures or additions. By law, we have to reassess that.
And so all these ADUs that are being pushed in all the various jurisdictions,
they're still going to be reassessed. The other misconception is that I built a house without a permit. You can't assess it. No, that's not true. If you build a structure without a permit, if we find it, we're going to reassess it.
And tell your buddies down the hall?
Yeah. Yeah, they'll find out because it goes to them after we assess it.
Oh, okay. So any improvement. Is there a minimum dollar threshold? Say somebody puts on a solarium and it's $5,000. Is that enough for you guys to get excited about?
We will still assess it.
Okay.
There is no minimum. Now, the county does have a minimum in assessed value. So anything under $2,000 in assessment won't generate a tax bill.
So it'll be a really small, short,
yeah,
solarium.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
And I believe that they're for building size like storage sheds. Anything under 100 square feet doesn't. I believe you may want to check with the planning department, but I don't think there's a permit that's required. But even if it's 50 square feet, we find it, we're still going to assess it.
That probably makes for some dynamic conversations.
Yes. We've had that conversations that, you know, this is just a temporary shed, or, you know, it's only, you know, 50 square feet. You know, why are you assessing it? By law, we have to assess it.
It's still Sacramento.
It's still Sacramento.
All right, bud. Thanks for coming by.
Well, thanks for having me.
Yeah, let's see if you can win the election by 20.
I hope so.
20 to 2. We've been talking shop this morning with Howard LaHaye. See you tomorrow.